Invocation tonight will be given by council member Zapala, and then we'll have a pledge given by one of our scouts, Gavin Ferguson.
Our dear Heavenly Father, we are thankful for the many blessings we have as a grateful for our many wonderful neighbors and for the many hours of service they put in with their families and with the school system and with the city. We ask that thou wouldst bless us tonight, that we might have thy spirit with us, that we might be able to listen to resident comments and to be able to discuss congenially with each other matters that we have to discuss. We ask that thou wouldst bless us, that we may keep in mind the principles of our city government and to be able to make wise decisions. And we ask these blessings in the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Gavin, go right ahead.
Will the audience please rise? Please repeat after me.
The Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Gavin. We love it when our scouts come and help us with the pledge. So I'm going to move on, and we need a motion to approve the meeting's agenda tonight as is, or if you want to make an amendment, I'm open to whatever you want to do.
I move that we approve the agenda as is.
Okay, I have a motion to accept the agenda as is. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion's been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Next item is public comments. This is where we give anyone that would like to speak for 3 minutes the opportunity to say whatever is on their mind. I have 5 people that have signed up. And so is Mr. Cromar here? Okay, let's just go next to Mr. Derringer. You want to come up to the mic, give us your address, and we'll go from there.
Name is Jerry Derringer. I live at 4211 Manila Creek Drive in Cedar Hills. And one of the purposes of my being here this evening is to try to encourage the council to reconsider the situation of Kim Holland Drake, who was the recorder here for the city of Cedar Hills for many, many years. I guess probably the first one and only one until she was removed. A little later in our comments, we'll be reading a statement of support for that. But from my standpoint, I don't claim to be giving a legal opinion, but I have reviewed various documents, including a contract that she had to sign and some case law and other things. And it appears to me that in layman's terms, she was railroaded and made part of a situation that she didn't really create, but it has caused her irreparable damage, including the loss of a lot of retirement opportunity. And we would encourage this council to possibly at least reinstate her retirement or to give her credit for a number of years that she worked before the actual retirement plan was put in place. And if she had tried to do that, I can remember before the council denied it at that time, but my review of her activity, and I didn't always agree with Kim, but she was honest and she studied things and she was about as knowledgeable as anybody I know here on the things that should be and shouldn't be. But if she disagreed with you, she'd come right out and let you know. And we always had a cordial relationship. Anyway, I just thought that I would add my emphasis to the statement that will be read. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Cromer, you are not here, but I saved your place. Why don't you hop up there if you'd like?
We've been trying to get ourselves organized. The next four speakers are combining our time to make four times 3 minutes, 12 minutes.
Yeah. And we don't do that. And so each person has 3 minutes.
It'll work out the same.
No.
So go ahead.
Here we go. So each person has 3 minutes. That's what I'll give them.
Okay. We, as members of Cedar Hill Citizens for Responsible Government and non-resident radio talk show host Sam Bushman, respectfully invite Mayor Gary Gygi and the City Council to consider requests we make in behalf of a former employee. And this employee, as it indicated, is Kim Collendrake, to restore 6 years of retirement funding. With the change of legal representation and a desire to restore trust with all Cedar Hills residents, we hope you'll allow us to refresh your memory. On May 1st, 2012, 20-year veteran city recorder Kim Collendrake was removed with a so-called voluntary resignation by then-city manager Conrad Hillebrand and the building inspector Brad Curl. On Tuesday, May 1st, 2012, just hours before the night's city council meeting, reportedly then-mayor Eric Richardson and then-city attorney Eric Johnson presented 20-year City Hills city recorder veteran Kim Collendrake with a separation from employment and waiver agreement, and told her that if she did not sign the voluntary resignation agreement at that time, the city council would be asked to fire her that evening. For many reasons, we believe that this demand by her, by Richardson and Johnson, was wrong and unconscionable. But their threat worked. An honest employee's career was destroyed and compromised. What was done that day to destroy her career and reputation can't be fixed. But at least the city of Cedar Hills can move to restore her 6 years of retirement that was compromised during that process. Those who presented that agreement to her are the ones who should have been called into question. And CHCRG, that's us, did and has the document on our website, www.cedarhillscitizens.org. As you know, the mayor resigned to plead guilty to bank fraud, and more recently, new legal counsel services in Kirtan McConkey have been secured. Now that the others are gone, the damage is still not. But you, as mayor and council, are in a position to make some repair to her for what she has suffered by providing her the 6 years of retirement that was compromised during that time. Reading highlights from the agreement that she was forced to sign should serve to firmly establish the unfortunate circumstances and duress she was placed under as follows. First one, I will never sue the city. Second, I will not any time hereafter file, participate in, or become a class member in any other complaints, charges, or legal or administrative proceedings against the city. Third, if any board, agency, or court assumes jurisdiction of any complaint, charge, or legal or administrative proceedings against the city, I shall request such board, agency, or court to withdraw or dismiss with prejudice the matter and use my best efforts to cause the agency or court to withdraw or dismiss the matter. And I will indemnify the city, parenthesis pay, for all damages, costs, expenses, including reasonable attorney's fees that city incurs in defending such any such matter.
Thank you very much.
I didn't say who I was. Paul Sorensen, 4078 West Oak Road North, Cedar Hills.
Thank you, Paul.
Greetings. My name is Kurt Crosby. I live at 9835 North Meadow Drive in Cedar Hills. I will not voluntarily communicate or cooperate with or assist any other person, firm, or organization that is suing or seeks to sue the city. Under item 12, acknowledgement of knowing and voluntary release, it reads, I have carefully read this waiver agreement, and I fully understand all of its provisions. I have been encouraged and advised in writing to seek advice from anyone of my choosing regarding this agreement, including my attorney, accountant, or tax advisor. Before signing this agreement, I have been given the opportunity and sufficient time to seek such advice. End quote. Remember, she was threatened with immediate firing if she did not sign the document at that moment. We believe this is an unenforceable and unconscionable contract that was signed under duress and without the benefit of legal advice under threat of termination, which would amount to firing with cause, which meant termination of health benefits and any severance pay. This travesty was forced on one of the finest and most honest employees the city of Cedar Hills has ever had or could hope to have. Respected by her peers in the state, 20-year veteran Kim Hollandrake had just been elected to serve as the new president of the Utah State Recorders Association. Instead, her career was cut short under questionable circumstances. It wasn't right. It wasn't fair. Her career and profession were unnecessarily compromised, and her ability to defend herself muzzled by a highly questionable contract. Miss Hollandrake didn't know such an onerous contract was questionable, but pursuant to Cedar Hill Citizens for Responsible Government's legal analyst Jerry Derringer's research, we have determined that the agreement is likely unenforceable. In an amazing and notable moment of instant karma, then the very next day, May 2nd, 2012, Mayor Richardson was charged with allegations of fraud in federal court, despite Cedar Hill Citizens for Responsible Government, a petition by Angela Johnson and the Daily Herald editorial staff calling for his resignation. He did not. We members of Cedar Hill Citizens for Responsible Government respectfully invite Mayor Gigi and the City Council to take advantage of this opportunity to at least make restitution to her name and reputation by doing the right thing and restore the 6 years of retirement she earned in service to all Cedar Hills residents during her 20 years. We invite a response in writing from the Mayor, Council, and City Manager to inform us of your thoughts and intentions regarding this request. Respectfully, Paul Sorensen, Kirk Crosby, Jerry Derringer, Ken Cromar, and Sam Bush.
Thank you, Kirk.
I think Kurt ended exactly on the right time. Didn't that timer go off like a second later? That was beautiful. I almost feel like Brian Regan, the comedian, where he's like, hey, batter, hey, batter. What do you say?
Could you give us your address and name, please?
Just wondering. All right. So my name is Sam Bushman, and I do not live in Cedar Hills. I live in American Fork, Utah at 1259 North 100 West. That is American Fork, and the zip code is 84003. And the reason I'm here today is I'm a nationally syndicated talk show host, and I usually don't deal with local city issues. And for the longest time, as I watched the news, I saw Cedar Hills make the news over and over and over again. It's been in the Daily Herald. It's been in the Salt Lake Tribune. It's been in KSL. It's been in Deseret News. Even BYU has had Cedar Hills in the news. And the problem is the news has not been favorable. And at first, I kind of just thought, you know, these are just some yahoos trying to cause trouble. But I decided after a while to just find out for myself. And I filed a FOIA request to try to get some information. And, you know, on the national stage, they call it stonewalling. Here, I won't call it that. I'll just say that it was less than favorable. I eventually called in a mediator, which is Rosemary Cundiff, the ombudsman for the state of Utah. And we had a mediation meeting. And in that mediation meeting, a couple of things stood out to me that I find disconcerting, to say the least. Number one, I watched a debate happen between the mayor and the city attorney at the time. And the debate was whether printed out paper records that came from emails are still emails. The mayor said yes, the attorney said no. And I sat and watched. And when I saw that happen, I had one question: is that going to be part of my FOIA request response, my grandma request response? The attorney said no, the mayor said yes. That's when I realized that things were not as simple as they should be in Cedar Hills. They were maybe not as transparent as we would like them to be. As I worked further to try to create mediation, we wanted to get emails that turned out to be on people's personal records, but we only wanted the city business emails. Well, again, the buzzsaw started. It almost reminds me of the Clinton mail, Hillary Clinton mail scandal, but nevertheless, I tried to come up with an affidavit, and the city agreed to this. The affidavit was to try to clear people's names and build trust within the community again. Nobody would sign it at first. Then I got to some city council members, one of them did sign it, and they basically said they were not given the opportunity to sign it before. We worked on the language slightly because they wanted some changes. and one city council member has signed it to date. I invite all city council members to come and work on the language with me. We can adjust the language to be satisfactory to all. Hopefully we'll get that signed and get some of that behind us, building trust in Cedar Hills once again. As I continued, I learned about Kim Hollandrake. And by the way, Kim Hollandrake works for my city now. Isn't that interesting? Nevertheless, I feel as I've researched it that Kim Hollandrake has done nothing wrong. How she got let go in the scandals that continually rock Cedar Hill.
15 seconds.
I don't know. However, I simply submit to you that we hope to build a relationship with the new attorneys and a relationship with a new transparency agenda in Cedar Hills. I have several solutions to help transparency with public records and more, and I look forward to working with them to accomplish those tasks.
Thank you very much.
We'd like to start with the affidavit, which has hitherto been mentioned.
Thank you, Sam.
My name is Ken Cromar, 9870 North Meadow Drive. The material that we wanted to get covered was covered, but I really think that as I sit back and listen to the rehearsal of what happened when Kim Hollandrake was forced to sign a contract, and by the way, that council meeting that night, there was a 15-minute illegal meeting that went on before that group, and you should remember this. You went behind the curtain and had an illegal meeting to discuss what was going to happen in that city council meeting. Do you remember, Mayor?
Of course, we celebrated Mrs. Reese's birthday. We were having cake.
I find that maybe interesting as part of it, but there was a discussion that went on. There was not.
We wished her happy birthday.
Okay. Nevertheless, there are some of you who were a party to making sure that event happened, and it was unconscionable, but you have the opportunity to fix it. I find it fascinating, as I look through this contract, that Kim was put under that if she didn't sign, that she would lose her job and lose her benefits and lose all those things that she had worked for all this time. And the question that comes to my mind is, why would a city attorney and a mayor at that time be asking somebody not to sue, not to say anything, to be held responsible to fight against any opportunity to testify about what had gone on in Cedar Hills, and to also be charged, be culpable, and have to pay the legal fees if indeed she did testify about the facts surrounding Cedar Hills? That says more about the mayor and the attorney at that time than it did about Kim Hollandrake. We would just be very grateful if the mayor and council would seriously consider restoring that which Kim had already earned and was about to be rewarded for her years of service, and we hope that that will be seriously considered and resolved soon, and that you'll let us know, Cedar Hills Citizens for Responsible Government, what your disposition is. And anybody who may be listening to this, cedarhillscitizens.org. That's cedarhillscitizens.org is where all of these events have been documented now for the last number of years, and you can get the facts and details there. Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Ken. Okay. Those were all the people that I had signed up for public comments. Was there somebody I missed?
I came in late.
Do you want to come up and state your name and address? Go ahead. You can leave them. If you wouldn't mind just giving your name and your address, please.
My name is Michael Johnson. I live at 9740 North Heislitz Hollow Drive. The reason I'm here tonight is I received an email today from Jeff Mogg, if I pronounced that correctly, about their gating off the road at the top of our hill. And the concern I have about the gate leads back to 3 years ago, almost 4 years ago, when my concern was about the speed of the cars coming down off the hill. And when I mentioned to either Jeff or numerous members of or employees with the city of, let's just put a speed bump, because they had issues with water coming off the hill during runoff time and with speed of traffic. So if they just put a speed bump, that would solve both issues. About a year and a half later, we end up with some freeway concrete barriers sitting there with this washout pad, and I told them it's not going to work. 2 days later, fire on the hill, fire trucks pull up, stop. They're sitting there watching the fire burn. Very few trucks could pass. They had to jerk a concrete barrier out of the way to get the truck passed. So 2 years later, you know, going down the road, I'm talking to all the employees, what are we going to do, what are we going to do? I've been told that was temporary, we're getting, looking into it, we're going to gate it off, we're going to do this. Well, by gating it off, where's all the cars going to park? In front of my house, down the street. There's going to be, I mean, it's just like the park on Tim Cove. There's no enforcement on that. We call the city, they say, call the police. Police shows up 20, 30 minutes after an incident happens, nothing gets solved. So we tell the city, we're doing everything we can, calling the police, nothing gets solved. So the main reason I'm here tonight is I'm completely against gating that off, and the only reason even anybody would even know about that getting gated off is because I got the email. I mean, or here in 2 weeks, they'll be putting a gate up. So I'm here to ask the city council to speak with the city employees about why would they even consider that approach without even talking to the residents who live there. We're there 24/7. Employees are 9 to 5, 5 days a week. And I mean, I don't know what else to say about it except for there's very huge lack of communication. I can make a phone call. 6 months later, I get a phone call back. I left a message with you, I believe 2 days ago. I got a call from Jeff. I missed it, and he sent me an email.
Right.
And I mean, we've spoken numerous times about this and other issues, but this is a main focus, you know, that I have. So, thank you.
Can you just clarify where that address is, where that gate is?
It's at the top of Heislitz. It's going to the water tanks.
Oh, okay, thank you.
It's where the barriers are.
Thank you, Michael. And so when you called, I gave the message to Mr. Bunker. And so I would encourage you to sit down with Mr. Mogg and Mr. Bunker and see if you guys can come up with some ideas. And so we're not going to have a give and take here. Just
I'm just saying, can we set an appointment tonight? I left a message with Jeff. My wife left a message with I think Chandler.
Mr. Mogg is sitting right there.
Okay.
And so I would encourage you and Mr. Mogg and Mr. Bunker to sit down and discuss this. I know that they'll listen to your ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And so you guys sit down and discuss that. And if I need to be there, I'll be there. But I'm confident that those two can handle it.
Okay.
Thank you very much. All right. I don't think I've missed anybody. We're going to continue on at this point with our consent agenda. So we have minutes from the April 14th, 2015 special city council meeting and also the April 21st, 2015 city council meeting. So someone would like to make a motion on that consent agenda. I'll take it.
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
Seconded.
We have a motion that's been seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Let's move on to city reports and business, starting with Mr. Bunker. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Okay. All right, Mr. Bunker, why don't you start, and then we'll move to your right.
Great. Just a couple of items. Our community center is getting very busy recently, and scheduling's a little bit more complex. But we are trying to work through it. That's why the city council is in the basement tonight. There's an event upstairs. We are having a musical called Honk in Full Swing, and they are practicing 3 to 4 days a week in the basement here. So we do have karate classes here and other recreation activities here at the center. And so we're just trying to fit everybody in. And if you need to schedule something, get with Greg Gordon and Natalie Scott. And they'll help you out with that. We've just finished a great month at the golf course and in the event group. They're doing a fantastic job, and things are really looking good there. We have a great staff that's working hard. T-ball and lacrosse registration is open right now, so if you're interested in T-ball or lacrosse, we are looking forward to a great season with those teams. And so... please join those if you have interest there. We're right in the middle of Tot Soccer and our other soccer programs, and kind of the biggest hit this year is the referees. No, wait, it's the uniforms. The uniforms are awesome. So the teen soccer program will wrap up next week, and then we will join the AF recreation program to do a double elimination tournament, which will be a nail biter, I'm sure. So those are some things happening in recreation. That's all.
Mr. Zappala, would you like to go next?
Sure. I have just a few items related to technology.
I was able to work with Chandler to get a survey put together using Qualtrics for the general plan, and that's going to be sent to as many residents as we can via email and social media. So that'll help achieve one of the goals we set during our retreat this year, starting to do more regular and low-cost surveys that will cost us nothing. And then I recently, with a few students at BYU, we received a small grant to continue developing our city issue tracker app this spring and summer. And our plan is that we'll have a website and an iOS app developed by the middle of June is our target date.
Anything else? Mrs. Reese?
Okay. The Planning Commission as a whole hasn't met since the last council meeting, but a few members of the Planning Commission, City Council, and staff met with Blue Line to discuss the concerns that the Planning Commission had with the renderings that were submitted at the last Planning Commission meeting. Everyone gave feedback to Blue Line regarding the design and look of the building, and the Planning Commission has agreed to hold a special meeting on May 12th to review updated plans that will be submitted by Blue Line. And the Planning Commission has also changed the regularly scheduled meetings, and these will now take place on the fourth Tuesday of every month in this building. On communication, the Daily Herald has been in contact with us on a few stories, one of those being water restrictions that was printed yesterday or the day before. Family Festival Committee is working hard. The magazine is with the printers and should go out next week. Banners are now up at the fire station and the roundabout, and more banners will go up as they receive site approval. Tickets are now on sale, and for the first time, tickets can be purchased online. Sponsorship money has exceeded the targeted amount, and plans for all events are scheduled, and I'm actually going to pass this down. This is a list of all of the events for Family Festival for all of you. The Arts Committee meets again in May, but things are going well. As David mentioned, practices for Honk are being held now at the facility. The summer concert series is being planned, and the concert for the Family Festival is booked, which consists of Peter Condor, who's a resident, Sabrina Haskett, and the Bela Four, who are also residents. And the children's art show is planned as part of the Family Festival. And that's all I have.
Okay. Thank you. There's not been a lone public safety meeting since we last met, so there's nothing to report there. And there's not been a finance committee meeting either. So I meet this Thursday evening with Mountain Land Association of Governments for our monthly meeting. I'll report back when we meet next on that. So, Mr. Geddes.
Okay, I'd like to report on dispatch. There are 8 RFQs that came in for the building as potential contractors. I'm on the committee, the building committee, so we're going to narrow that down to 5 qualified bidders. That's ongoing. The in between meetings, next meeting is in 2 weeks, I think 2 weeks. So that's it with that. As far as the Park and Trail and Beautification Committee, for those that don't know, we had a city day of
service
on Saturday. It started at 7 o'clock in one of the projects down on Kangen Road, as at the entrance to Cedar Hills. So one of our Eagle Scout projects last year was to put that sign there, and it needed some work around it. So if you drive by it, there was probably 15 to 25 people there at different times for that project. It was all scraped out, all the sod, and the city provided gravel, and it was all put in. It was a lot of work. But it looks great. So if you haven't seen it, go by and take a look at it. Thanks to Public Works and staff that helped with that. I've got sore muscles still from, and I'm not kidding.
Me too.
From loading up trucks of stuff that we hauled away. Anyway, and then that was just one of the projects. The other project was take a look at the roundabout. The flowers are beautiful. There was probably another 10, 15 people there. Maybe more, until right up till 11:30. And that project started at 9. It looks great. And then the last project that was, we had 10 plus people, including the mayor and his family, that walked up and down the trails and collected probably 5 or 6 big garbage bags of trash.
Our new city attorney David Shaw was also there, and he didn't need to be. He doesn't live in our city. Very nice of
him. Yeah, it was nice. Our new city attorney, that was great. So I would just like to say I felt in all probably up close to 50 participants in the project. It was a lot of fun, and I think in the next year we can come up with the projects and maybe get it out. I think what worked best, and we'll go over this in our committee, but we had a group like young women group. So if we can get it out in the wards and things like that, is they're always looking for opportunities to serve. And a couple of people came up and said if it hadn't been that week, you know, they had conflicts. But I think that's a really good way to get a group of scouts next time or whatever, because there was a group of scouts down on the sign project actually. So it was a great opportunity to serve, and I think it was good for our community. Thanks.
Anything else?
That's it.
Mr. Augustus?
Nothing from North Point. We haven't met since our last meeting. Nothing from anything else. The one thing I would like to throw out just as a reminder is during our council assignments, I was appointed to economic development. Uh-huh. And this recent meeting with Blue Line, I was not invited or informed about it.
Neither was I.
So, yeah, just as a reminder, that's something that is kind of within my duties, so I'd like to be invited to those in the future.
I wasn't invited either.
Oh. Okay.
Mr. Crawley?
Finance Committee did not meet scheduling conflicts, but we will meet next Thursday. So that's all I have.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let's move on now to our scheduled items. First item is an action item on FY15 budget amendments. So, Mr. Lowe, why don't you pick up where you left off?
I'm going to go over the budget amendments. We went over through work session, but first budget amendment, each year we try to project what the surplus is in the general fund and stay in compliance with the state. We have a couple of projects right now that are planned as part of our capital improvements plan. And so proposed a budget of up to $250,000, between $100,000 and $250,000, depending on how the revenues and expenditures end up at the end of the year. We have about two-thirds of the revenue numbers, because there's a two-month lag on sales tax, property tax, and stuff. So family festival dinner changes. The Family Festival Committee recommended a $5,000 increase for the dinner, and their plan was to offset that with additional donations than the original budget. Motor pool reclassifications is not changing the amount that was budgeted, but just reclassing it to expense accounts instead of transfer in and transfer outs accounts. So. Golf fund, same change. There has been a transfer in from the transfer to the motor pool fund in the past, and now it will show up as a golf motor pool charge. Capital projects fund is the other side of the transfer from the general fund when there is anticipated a surplus. We have in the past transfer that into the capital projects fund, and it's also, we have a ton of projects that we could do in the city if we had funding, and this will help with that. Mass transit sales tax revenues and distribution. In 2002, I think the city residents voted to have a mass transit sales tax, and up until 2011, the state collected and distributed that on behalf of the city. There's not much coming in now. The county passed a countywide mass transit sales tax, and the only sales tax we have is from old sales tax collections from prior years. So it's not anything current is going through the county. But I just put this in here because it's on the state auditor checklist, and the auditor will ask about it. Water and sewer fund, another motor pool reclassification, just changing it from a transfer to a charge. And with Timpanogos Special Service District, we collect impact fees, which are kind of volatile. So in the past, we've booked those to a liability account and paid them out of the liability account. Even though it's a pass-through, the better way to show that is with the revenue and expense. And so this is something we'll just have to watch, because we don't have a lot of building activity. But if a big project comes in, then this number will get adjusted. Okay, that's all the budget amendments that I have proposed for tonight.
Councilor, do you have any questions on the budget amendments? This is an action item, and so before he moves on to FY16 budget items, I suggest that maybe now is a good time to ask questions, have some discussion. If not, then somebody make a motion.
I'm happy to make a motion unless there's a need for more discussion.
I have one quick comment, and that is we have $200,000 budgeted for a maintenance shed to be built. Has that started yet, or is there anything in the works to get that started? Has the building maintenance shed for the golf course for $200,000, have any plans been made to start that project yet?
So from talking to David at our earlier working session meeting, they're in the process of surveying the land.
Okay.
And then engaging an architect to design the building.
The only comment I would have on that is that we do have in our things that we're planning on discussing this year, one of the items is options for the golf course. And I just thought some of the options may conflict with building that building. Maybe we should try to get that item taken care of prior to the construction of the building. That's a suggestion I have on that budget item. So I would suggest.
What item are you referring to?
On the budget, there's a $200,000 capital expenditure outlay budgeted for the building of the golf maintenance shed. And then what Mr. Lowe presented earlier was our plan that we as a city council said that we were going to try to accomplish these things during the year. One of them was to look at options for the golf course. And I just thought if we're going to look at options for the golf course, maybe we should get that done prior to putting $200,000 capital expenditure in the golf course. That just makes sense to me.
Can I just weigh in on that one?
Absolutely.
Because I think as we left that work session, mm-hmm. I think that was your agenda item.
Right. And three people voted for it.
Which I was one of them.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm all for it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that precludes us from moving forward on a maintenance shed that is absolutely necessary for mm-hmm. for just the safety and well-being of our employees.
Okay. That's just, man, it's just my opinion.
Not to correct you, but I think there's we budgeted $300,000 for that. I think $200,000 comes out of that fund, and then another $100,000 out of the sewer and
right.
yep. and the road fund.
Absolutely right. Yep.
Is that correct?
Yes.
So, Rob, do you have a plan to move forward with that? What would your timeline be for what is it that you want to investigate, and how long will that take?
That's a good question. I would like to start some conversations on that pretty soon, at least talk about are there options besides what we've been doing in the past, and just start that conversation. I actually have done a little bit of research preparing for that, but I feel like I need a lot of input because I'm not the brightest person in the world on some issues, especially real estate issues. So I think there are different options. I know it's been a debatable item in the past whether the golf course is worth continuing as is with it, or if there's other options. And I think that it'd be good to discuss what other options there are, if any. And basically, if we at least present a couple different options, they can be shot down by the city over as a whole, or by residents, or by city council people. But at least we ought to have the discussion of what other options there are. And if we come up with a good alternative, get some debate going over whether to continue as is or to do different options. But yeah, I'd like to start that soon. How long it will take will depend on a lot of factors, but I think that it's a conversation that really should start ASAP.
Okay, Mr. Augustus, you were wanting to speak.
Yeah, so I'm kind of curious,
how does this differ from what the Golf Course Finance Committee meetings did, took place, and what their recommendation was? Because we've gone through this before. Mm-hmm. We've put together a whole committee. I sat as a committee member of that and spent many nights discussing these issues. Right. And the committee, which was based on our residents, they came back with a unanimous recommendation saying that based on the financials and the, looking at all of the details, that they could not find another viable reason to shut down the golf course or do something different with it.
Right.
So I'm curious as to how the council could come up with something different if council members, the mayor, and residents were involved and reviewed all of that and couldn't come up with something else. So what's the difference between what we're doing now and what we've done in the past?
It was never really discussed thoroughly what other options there were if we did, say, shut down the golf course, or what other options there would be. That was something that was never discussed in detail during those meetings.
But the details were discussed about how much our bonds were, how much we owe on the golf course, and they looked at it and said, if we shut it down, we still have the payments on that.
Right.
So that
it
was a very
quick discussion. I don't think it got thorough enough attention at that time to say, hey, here's another option, let's look at them seriously. And so I have some thoughts. I brought them up with the mayor last year. I have some thoughts to look at and at least discuss. And I think the worst thing is if everyone feels like there could be other options, but no one's willing to look at it. And that's how I felt before I was on the city council, that there was never a good thorough look at it. And I still don't think there has been. Mostly what we were talking about then was, has it lost money? Let's get the facts out there. That was the number one goal of that committee.
Which the committee did and showed how much we did lose on it.
Absolutely. I think we accomplished that. That was the number one goal. The number two goal was to try to figure out how we can improve the profit of the golf course. It wasn't to discuss different options of what we could do if we wanted to discuss something that maybe might not lose as much money for the city each year.
Well, and the committee made recommendations on what they thought could happen, but they're not involved in the day-to-day operations, and they turned that over to the golf director, mm-hmm. who's implemented what he could of that.
Right. So my opinion is we ought to look at the options. At least if we do, I think a lot of the city people, residents in the city will say, oh, we've at least looked at it. I'm not going to blame the city anymore. We've looked at it. We've decided the best option is to keep it open. And that may well be the result of this kind of probe into different options. But also there could be some good ideas that come out that might be viable alternatives. So I think it's worth looking at. We discussed this a little bit and three people voted to look at it. I think it's worth looking at.
Okay, well, I'm a little hesitant about it just because we've gone through this multiple times, and we even had a resident committee that looked at it. And I think personally that they did a good job at looking at the options. Mm-hmm. And discussing those issues.
I was on that committee too, and we never discussed thoroughly any options. That wasn't the goal of those meetings.
Okay.
So.
Okay. You're always welcome to bring your ideas forward.
Right.
So, I will do that. Which is one of the reasons I voted for that, not to interrupt you, but that's, I'm welcome. You know, I'm 100% proponent of the golf course, and I think I'd like to state that the recommendations that were put forth, and I was not on that committee 2 years ago, a lot of them have been implemented, and we're seeing the fruits of it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think things are going good. I hate to bring up past negatives if they're just going to create a stir for and create angst amongst a small percentage of our population, which is, you know, but I'm welcome to your ideas.
Right. And if I thought it was a small percentage then of our population that feels upset about the losses of the golf course, I wouldn't bring it up. But because I feel it is a large percentage, a lot larger than we want to admit, I think it's something we ought to discuss openly. And whatever conclusion kind of surfaces to the top because it's the best idea, I think it's just important to get a lot of people in the city on the same page. And like I said, I'm not proposing that we shut down the golf course right now by any means.
No, you're not.
Because I don't even know what this analysis will end up showing. But I think that because it's been such a loss for the city over the years, I think we owe the residents a thorough analysis of different options that are reasonable options, or, you know, as reasonable as we can get. And if it turns out that one of them is to shut down the golf course, one of them is to keep it open, and we look with very open and honest opinions and try to get real facts into the discussion, then we decide that, you know, it really is best to keep the golf course. I think the city would be in a very good position as opposed to where we are now, because a lot of the residents that are really negative about the golf course, which I've seen quite a bit of, I think would be tamed down. Now, if we do come up with a good alternative that benefits residents better than keeping it open, then that's important for us to at least delve into that option also. So either way, I think it's good for the city to look at this a little bit, and because I think there still is two camps out there, those that think we should shut it down, those that think we should keep it open, and I think it will benefit us if we can have some good, lively, but intellectually honest discussions about it.
Thank you. There will always be those camps, mm-hmm. and I'm hesitant about stirring the pot every few years in mm-hmm. order to satisfy one camp when I know that they'll bring it up again. But we haven't moved forward on this, Mr. Crowley, because we've been waiting for you.
Right, and I will move forward now. I have never seen a good analysis or good presentation of options presented yet. So
I would just encourage you and your friends, uh-huh. if this is an issue, it's an election year, mm-hmm. do something that has never been done in the city before, which mm-hmm. is that you and whoever of your friends that want to do this, mm-hmm. run on it. Get your mm-hmm. campaign signs to say, I am whoever, I want to shut down the golf course, who's with me?
First of all, I don't want to shut down the golf course. Second of all, I don't have any friends that are pushing me to do this. And
well,
so,
you were just
yeah.
saying that there was, you know, I don't want to get into this, but you right. were just saying there's, apparently you know that there's a number of people.
Right, right. Like someone in my ward just brought it up. And how are you doing today? Doing pretty good, except for all my money's going to the golf course because it's losing money. And as someone that I didn't even know was involved in politics, just little comments like that I wish would stop.
Again,
so.
we're just waiting on you.
Yep.
But I would encourage whoever you talk to uh-huh. that if this should be handled in the political realm, meaning if
right.
they want to do that, they should run for office and say, mm-hmm. I'm interested in shutting down the golf course. Who's with me?
Right.
That would be the proper way of doing it, I think. Okay, mm-hmm. Mrs. Reese, were you wanting to say something?
Yeah, David, how long will it take for that survey to be done?
Our thoughts, it will be done within about 30 days, so it's quickly.
And then the next part is a design of the building?
Right, and then we would put that out to bid, and so that will take some time as well. So we're talking months, a month, month and a half before it would come to the council for a decision.
Okay. So I would just echo, I think, what Councilmember Geddes said, which was that we had this discussion a year ago when we were talking about the fiscal year 2015 budget. And at that time, this exact same conversation happened. And so we're here a year later and nothing's been done. And I would just encourage that if an analysis is going to be done, that it needs to get done within the next 2 months so we can decide whether or not we're going to move forward on this instead of delaying it for another year.
Okay. I would think that we proceed with what is already planned, and Mr. Crowley, you're welcome to make any type of presentation that you want, anytime you want.
Okay, and I can do it in the next city council meeting then?
What's that?
I'll probably try to present something in the next city council meeting.
Just communicate with me, and
okay.
So I have to work into the agenda, mm-hmm. you know, a presentation if that's what you're doing. I haven't cleared the next agenda, and mm-hmm. so I'm not going to promise you that you can be on the next agenda, but we certainly will get you, and if we can, we certainly will, because this is an important issue.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Let's move on. Okay, I think that there was a motion that Mr. Zappala was ready to make.
Yes. Let me call that back up.
I move that we adopt resolution number 5-5-2015A, a resolution adopting the amended 2014-2015 fiscal year budget for the city of Cedar Hills, Utah.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
I second.
Mr. Geddes seconded it. Any further discussion? Let's have a roll call vote. Mr. Crowley.
Aye.
Mr. Augustus.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Voting was unanimous. Thank you very much. Let's move on to number 8, which is an action item on the FY16 tentative budget. And so this is to approve the tentative budget for our next year. Mr. Lowe, time's yours.
While we're waiting on this, just procedurally, because this is only the second time, and the last time we did this, I was brand new. We have until when to approve this? I mean, 1st of June, right?
The FY next year's budget?
Yes.
I think Mr. Lowe is probably going to go over that, but we're in the process. I think our tentative is due.
We have to do the tentative today.
Yeah,
we do.
But the final's
mm-hmm.
in final. June, because we won't have property tax numbers from the county until then. So we can't do the final.
They come in July, don't they?
No, they come right before the budget.
It's a couple of days before we approve it.
We're just opening up the budget for next year, and then we'll finalize it.
But we're required to do the tentative in May, even if we completely change it in a month.
Right, gotcha. Thank you.
Technically, we can approove a budget of $1 revenue, $1 expense tonight, and we're good.
Yeah.
We just have to show a balanced budget tonight.
Okay.
This is ridiculous.
Sorry, I'm not used to my little pointer thing. I'm a rookie. We just got this, so.
Absolutely ridiculous. So we're doing this tonight.
We're discussing the tentative budget, and by Utah code, we're required to pass a tentative budget on the first meeting we have in May. So that's tonight. Before we started working on the budget, we had a retreat in January, and the elected officials came up with several points that they wanted addressed during the upcoming budget year, and these are most of the points. There's also been some new things brought up since then, but this is what was brought up in the retreat.
Is this an order of the number of votes received?
I forgot the vote.
Good question.
I
think
it's okay.
I think it is.
Okay.
Yes. Utah's unemployment. I went over this earlier. Our economic condition right now is very good locally. Nationally, there's some volatility there. The consumer confidence level is very optimistic, but there is some a slight downward trend on that. Here's a pie chart that shows where our revenues came 10 years ago, and I talked about earlier how our largest revenue source was from building and license and permits, 29%. And we had a pretty balanced revenue stream between sales tax and property tax. And from recreation and events, we had only 1% of our revenue. 10 years later, for this upcoming budget, 31% of our revenue comes from sales tax. 2% comes from licensing and permits. So that's quite a change. Property taxes stayed about the same. And recreation events has gone up to 8%. Currently, our major taxes we don't have a lot of control over increasing those unless we have a truth in taxation, but with property taxes last year, we requested less from the debt levy, and that caused a decrease of about $55,000 so far this year. Property taxes are pretty much finalized what we're collecting because the March settlement just happened. Sales taxes have been up each month except for 1 month we went down a couple thousand. Franchise taxes have been down most of the year due to the mild weather in the winter, and we had a cool summer at the end of last summer. So motor vehicle fees have been pretty flat. So that means even though we requested less property taxes, that means motor vehicle sales within the county have been higher than the year before because we're still getting about the same amount of funding so far. Telecom taxes for statewide has been going down slightly. Care taxes is slightly up from last year. So this gives a little more detail of the month-to-month trend. You can see the blue line on top is the current year collection for monthly sales tax. Because September is the first month that really counts for our fiscal year, we've only had two-thirds of the collection so far, and so we still have one-third to go, and hopefully the trend is a positive trend. This shows the franchise fees. It's not terribly below the what it's been in prior years, but it is behind the last year. Now, what we have a little more control of as staff is program revenues, and those are all doing very well. Green fees are up, pro shop sales are up, event rentals are up, recreation programs revenues are up. Some of the changes since March, the legislature passed HB 362. We won't have a full year of effect until the following fiscal year, but in this next fiscal year, starting January 1st, we'll start getting some funding from that. And so for half the year, we've budgeted a $22,000 increase. The committee chair from Family Festival asked for the income along with more expenses. So he asked for increase in donations. Recreation classes, like theater, there's been a huge increase in theater, and we've had dance classes and stuff. So I've increased that a little bit from March. This is how our expenditures were 10 years ago. We spent a lot, and streets and public works also includes building. And so our biggest category was streets, public works, and building. And public safety was only 16%. And general, which includes legal services, auditing services, and admin, recorder, that stayed the same 10 years later. Public safety has gone from like 15 to 16% to 29%.
Wow.
The building expenses have gone down quite a bit, and our community services, what we spend on community services and parks, has been a bigger focus in the last few years. Update on the plan for the employees and for the elected officials is a 3% merit wage increase for those that are evaluated to get that, and that's on average. And there are two employees that are impacted by the incremental market analysis that were outside the range. Elected officials, some elected officials aren't able to get the life insurance benefit, so one thought is to have some kind of like $30 a month stipend, which is kind of the median price we pay for insurance. The health insurance cost for this last year with our current plan is expected to go up 5.46 in July, and the dental, it will go up 3.5%. URS is planning no increases this year. It's just the first time in a while, which is nice. So here's a little history. The last time I presented this, I just had a few years, so I stretched it out a little longer. The blue, I had the colors wrong. The fire chief let me know last time. So now blue is police, red is fire. And so one of the big reasons why fire has grown the most is we increased the level of service. We didn't have people in our public safety building, and now we do. And that was a big priority to our city. So that is why you see the growth there. You can see our police has been pretty stable, and we hasn't really grown that much in cost. General fund expenditures since March. The motor pool changes are just reclassifications. The amounts didn't change. I added about $10,000 because we changed our services with our legal. So overall, we're $20,000 more than what I budgeted the prior year. When our audit services came back, we were able to save quite a bit through the audit bids, and so that went down $9,500.
Cheryl, quick question. So on this, it says legal services $10,000 increase, but on the other one, it says $20,000. It's actually $20,000?
It's $20,000 compared to last year. It's $10,000 more since the last time I presented it.
Okay, that makes sense.
So, professional, technical, I've increased that $5,000 because of we're in need to replace Sire, and also there's several studies it looks like we want done, or maybe surveys or different things. We're looking at different products, so that's just kind of a, you know, hopefully they don't cost a lot, but that's just kind of a contingent thing there. Finance department, I had someone in my department, their husband graduated from BYU, and they moved back to IRTA to be by family, and so we hired someone else, and so there's a little change there. And right now there's a placeholder for a high school counselor allocation, which could change depending on what the other cities are willing to contribute and if there's any anybody willing to else to contribute and what the council wants in the end, but that's just a placeholder. Golf and golf debt service fund highlights. Everyone knows there's been Questar construction that's been driving people crazy, I'm sure. It bothered our course for about 6 months because we had record mild weather in February and beginning of March. But even with that, the golf course is up $24,000 from last year at this time, which is great. We were able to replace 2 green mowers and a pump sprayer in January as part of our new equipment replacement plan. The golf debt service funds estimated fund balance with all the property tax collections and motor vehicle fees we expect to collect through the end of the year is probably about $4,000. Last year there was a little bit of a windfall because it was the first time we had allocated motor vehicle fees. So if you look at our debt service fund levies the last 5 years, before we refunded the golf fund, we're paying around $387, and then after we refunded it, it went down to $330, and then with the allocation of motor vehicle fees, it went down even further last year. Now it's going to stabilize around $327 a year, it looks like, going forward. Capital projects funds, these are the capital related items that we brought up earlier. Bay Hill Park is in the budget. A swimming pool feasibility, I think that's going to be part of some of the surveys that Daniel brought up earlier. And we might have to ask experts on what the actual operation. We can look at cities like Linden. I know they budget $1 million, but you know, for maybe that's not the same kind of pool we're looking at. So we might have to get actual costs for the kind of pool that we're interested in. Canyon Road pedestrian and bike access was an item, and I think we budgeted a little bit for that. Golf maintenance shed. Like was discussed earlier, there's $200,000 currently budgeted in the capital projects fund, $100,000 in the water and sewer fund. Library feasibility is another study that, along with expanding the recreation center because of its success in having events and classes. Golf course options, which Rob brought up earlier, and a cemetery feasibility. So this is the breakdown by funding. $235 for Bay Hill Park is the placeholder until we get actual numbers. Golf maintenance shed, that's another placeholder until we get actual bids. Harvey Boulevard traffic mitigation, $50,000, another placeholder until we've finalized that. And Canyon Road sidewalk projects is another placeholder.
Just for clarification, the Canyon Road sidewalk projects, is that Lakeview Trails subdivision?
No,
that we're adding?
It would be adjacent to the city's building.
But I mean, it's adding to that area. Yes, there. Okay. Yeah.
Can those come out of restricted funds of the road?
Which one?
The Canyon Road sidewalk.
I don't know about sidewalks projects. The Harvey Boulevard was restricted funding, but
that project was not identified in the capital projects plan initially, so it was not a project identified for the impact fee analysis, but we can look into that and see if it can qualify.
No, I gotcha.
Question on that again. So I'm adding up 100K from Bay Hill Park and 200K for the shed. So it's looking like 315K out of unrestricted balance. Is that right?
Capital project.
Yeah. Oh. 300, yes.
And I'm looking at the budget document we have, which has remaining fund balance of 696. So are we really spending down almost half of that? Is the plan?
You're in the capital projects fund?
I'm looking at general fund revenues. No. I'm looking at the fund balance.
No, that's coming from capital projects fund.
This is a different unrestricted fund balance.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's not, no. So some of the money in the earlier budget adjustment we were transferring, that 696
okay.
ends up being that number after we've transferred this 250,000 over. Assuming that we don't have any, that 696 is a very conservative number because that's assuming that we don't have any increase revenues over expenditures at the end of the year. And so I anticipate that number to be closer to 750, 800. Anything else on this slide? Okay. Okay, as far as we're in the process of working with Boyle and Collins on a few different alternatives for a utility rate study. Right now, the current version of the utility rate study proposes a 6.4% a year. PI remains flat. Sewer rates increase 5.5% a year. Storm drain rates increase 6.5% a year. Bowen and Collins is going to come May 19th and show some alternatives. Some of those alternatives include having meters, and if that would save them enough money to justify having meters for our secondary water. There's other reasons to have meters, but when I was talking to them today, what they were looking at was 12 or 13 years, they see it breaking even the cost of having secondary meters. So I think you'll see there are different alternatives pretty interesting at the next meeting.
Are they presenting next time?
Yeah.
Great.
Short-term projects, we've been doing a lot of meter maintenance. You also know about the Harvey Well maintenance and PI improvements. So originally on our calendar we had Old Town Storm Drain Retention Project and 4000 West, and those have been delayed. for now. With the current proposed rates, these are the increases to the different revenues. The first revenue number represents what the city now has to charge its own parks and its golf course for water use. And the this is something recent that the state auditors asked each city to do. So there's now shown a $39,000 increase that we're charging ourselves, and then we're reimbursing ourselves. And there's a public hearing on that on the next meeting. The other increases have to do with the utility rate study, the $34,000, the $16,000, and $54,000. As far as expenses go, we anticipate our electric to keep going up. Costs, our TSSD cost increase, and our meter maintenance and PI cost to increase. Staffing changes have resulted in approximately 7,000 less than the prior year. Our base on our current debt service coverage, we were able to cover our bond covenants, but we'll have to look at that again with the new study. And motor pool fund, we added golf maintenance equipment in the spring, which increased the transfer for golf. That is now not going to show as a transfer, it will show as a golf a fund motor pool charge. And that's how you'll see it in the budget. $1,500 decrease for the general fund and a $2,500 decrease for the water and sewer fund. The plan for this year is two trucks and one passenger car. Are there any questions on the motor pool fund? That's all the funds. Overall, our local economy is very positive. It's almost annoying positive at the point of the mountain, but hopefully you don't have to drive that way very often. National economy shows some volatility. Funds are balanced and healthy. No increase to the certified property tax amount proposed, and we need to approve a tentative budget for tonight.
I have a few.
Okay.
Cheryl's not surprised. I have a few questions. And I apologize if I've asked these in the past. So I just try to look for the bigger items.
Yes.
There was an increase in salaries and benefits for community service and part-time. That was just adding on another part-time person, correct?
One of the things we did differently was we took from a vendor that was doing building maintenance, and we added a part-time custodian. So that's going to show up there. And then also in the benefits part, Natalie, our events person, has done a fantastic job. She is getting benefits now and working 32 hours a week instead of 25.
Okay. And then there was a decrease in recreation class expenses by $15,000?
Yes. So in the tree fitness used to be a larger portion of that. So we still have theater, karate, different classes taking place.
Is tree fitness no longer here?
I think tree fitness is, I don't know if they're permanently gone, but they're on break, at least for now.
Okay. My other question was, the green fees show an increase to $555,000. How close are we to meeting our budgeted amount for this fiscal year?
So we're ahead of the budget right now.
So we're already above $545,000?
No, we're
for the
not.
Budget
but on pace of where we were last year, we met the budget, and we're ahead of by last year by 24,000, and I think we only increased the budget by maybe 15.
So you think we'll meet that 545?
As long as we have similar months for May and June.
And no more Questar projects.
No. It's very, golf's very weather related, unfortunately, and we've had good weather for them, so that's helped. So I do believe that we'll reach their overall revenues easily, no weather.
Okay. And then my last one was on utilities for the golf course. Those are increasing 31,000.
That is just showing the water they use and they're charging themselves.
Okay. Thank you.
So let me ask a couple of questions. I think we're going to fine-tune a lot of this in Finance Committee, so I'm not really interested in getting in the weeds today. But I'd like you to perhaps double-check 10-33-500, Class C road funds. I've seen data from the county that says that this year there won't be an increase. It'll actually be next year.
Yeah, and so I was just in St. George where ULCT presented. And I think the numbers that they showed you, I saw the ones. It says this is for fiscal year 2017, the full year. But they're just trying to give people an idea of what it will be like for a full year. But the money will start January 1st.
I understand that. So January 1st through the end of our fiscal year, money will be collected. So the county is saying that there's going to be very little, yet you're showing a $22,000 increase in Class B and C.
So
I'm just saying we should probably talk about this more in Finance Committee meeting and flesh out the numbers a little bit more. But that's what I've seen so far.
Maybe for the county that is really little.
What's that?
Maybe for the county that is a really little because they have a big budget.
It has nothing to do with that. They're just estimating Class B and C road funds, and they're showing very little increase for this next year.
Okay.
Okay. Anyone else have questions?
I do. I want to go back to the golf fund.
Okay.
And I don't know that I have any particular suggestions as to how to improve it, but I would like to see the transfer being decreased each year and make progress on that. Mm-hmm. And it went down quite a bit from FY 2014 to FY 2015. And I'd like to see at least some progress reducing that. I know some things are going up because the motor pool is going in there and the water charges are going in there. But it'd be really nice to try to keep that lower.
Yeah. I know the frustration everyone has when anything goes up in cost, something political as the golf course. We got to look at the market and how it's doing compared to if every other golf course was growing 20% and ours was only growing 2%, then be like, what is wrong with us? You know, if they're flat or going worse and we're still growing in revenues, our cost to maintain parks, there's an increase in inflation each year. And so as much as we want to decrease it, we're budgeting conservatively. We anticipate doing better than the budget. Now, I don't think our subsidy will go up, actually, but we've just haven't had to show water charges in the past, so it's not really a significant change other than the equipment. But we had to replace our equipment at some time, and I understand your frustration, but I'm not sure there's a long-term solution because the short-term ones are the same ones, let's not spend as much on fertilization or let's not have as good a customer service. Let's let things go a little bit. And I'm not sure how to make people keep coming back to our golf course with those kind of decisions.
Mr. Zappala, are you satisfied? Do you have more questions?
That was my major question.
Mrs. Reese?
That's it.
Mr. Geddes?
I agree with what Daniel's saying. I think you got to look at the whole picture. And I mean, collectively, I know we separate out the rec center and all the other things, but I think collectively as a whole, in my opinion, we're headed in the right direction. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Gustis, you have any questions?
No, I just agree with Councilmember Geddes. I think our finance committee and our finance director do an awesome job of monitoring these and making recommendations to the council. So just a thank you to them for putting this together, and I would like to make a motion when all questions are answered.
I still have one more councilman.
No, I said when questions are answered. Okay. Yeah.
Mr. Crowley, you have any questions?
No, I'm happy with that. Their job they're doing also, and I'd like to, now that I'm the last one, be the one to propose the... No, I'm just kidding.
All right, go ahead and make a motion.
Okay. In honor of former council member Scott Jackman, year after year, day after day, our beloved benevolent beings of the state legislature have maintained meaningless statutes, in this case mandating tonight that the city council adopt a completely non-binding preliminary and tentative budget in advance of passing an actual budget, and in this case prior to full figures being available from the county assessor's office. Nevertheless, wishing to be in complete compliance with even poorly written laws that even the benevolent legislature isn't willing to follow, I move that we approve the non-binding preliminary budget for the fiscal years of 2015-2016 and again publicly invite esteemed public servants and the legislature to attend more municipal meetings so that they can better understand how municipal government functions. Further, we would like to publicly thank our finance director and his staff for their diligent work in monitoring our municipal finances and for preparing this tentative budget.
Seconded. Okay, I have a motion that's been seconded. Any further discussion? Okay, let's have a vote. Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Gustis.
Aye.
Mr. Crowley.
Aye.
Voting was unanimous. Thank you very much. Let's move on to item number 9. Mr. Mogg, we're going to talk about secondary watering schedule.
Yes, Mayor and Council, at our last meeting, there was a discussion concerning the citywide watering schedule for our secondary water. And at the end of that discussion, there were some questions that was outstanding, and we had 4 specific questions that I was asked to maybe present some information on. And one of those was how many staff members would need to hire for enforcement of a policy. And we believe 2 part-time employees would be adequate to cover that. And we would also have additional time for our regular staff as they was here during daytime hours. We could patrol that. The second was what the cost of this would be. And we're estimating that the cost would be about $22,700. And there would also be some secondary costs associated with the use of the city vehicles. There could be additional legal expenses, and there is a possibility, well, obviously would have some additional staff time of the current employees. The other question is where the money would come from, and that would come out of the water and sewer fund. What we're anticipating, and because that we feel this would be an ongoing process year after year, we're suggesting that may be added to the Bowen Collins study. The last was the possibility of breaking the city up into zones for the actual physical delivery of water to everybody. If we divided into 2 days a week and divided the city in half, staff didn't feel like we'd be able to supply all of the water that would be required in that short of a time. Our system's somewhat different than a lot of the jurisdictions that we're seeing on the news where they're limiting their water watering times during the week, and they have large reservoirs where they collect the water. And they have small sources of water feeding that, and it takes time for them to recover the amount of water so they can turn it loose into the city. We're a little different when we have a few small reservoirs, and we typically drain those regularly, and so we have to continually provide water at a regular rate. And so we feel that that would be the best option, is to divide the city. We kind of analyze that and would recommend that we do have an upper and a lower pressure zone in our irrigation system. And if we were to divide those into 3 zones, three upper, three lower zones, and then divide those each into half on odd and even days. And I think we presented a schedule to you in the packet that kind of shows how that would work, that we would be able to provide the necessary water to meet the demands that came each day. We could keep up with that. That would leave Sunday open as a citywide spot watering day, in which people could water areas with their holes. Those were the specific questions. I don't know if there's other questions that you'd like us to try to address.
I just like your opinion on whether these kinds of water restrictions will be effective in reducing water demand.
I have two thoughts on that. One, the mayor helped us get a Citizens Water Conservation Committee, and they evaluated some of these issues in other jurisdictions and information that was provided. And they didn't make a recommendation to do a watering schedule. And I tend to agree with their recommendation that there may be a slight decrease in the amount of water we use. But on the other hand, there's just as high a chance that we would have an increase in our water consumption, which would put us in a little bigger bind than we are now. The other thought is that the recommendation from the committee was that we try an education, citizen education program. We did increase the education through various means last year, and we're continuing to do education this year. We've also had an increase in media coverage of the necessity. It's pretty much statewide and very readily available. And if we was to go to a scheduled watering system, then we would lose the information that we've gained in the past year. We've started education. Now it's time to see results. Did we get any results from this education? If we change in midstream and go to a new program, then we would lose the ability to see if that was effective. So I'm thinking that we could possibly reduce our water consumption by going to a scheduling program, but I think the education program would probably be just as effective.
So,
that's
Jeff,
my personal opinion. But.
So can you run through us the scenario if we put watering restrictions in place and we start to see an increase in our water usage? What happens to us at that point?
I hear a couple of different discussions on the amount of water we have and how much water we can provide to each resident. And our issue isn't the amount of water that we provide, but when we provide it. If everybody took an even amount of water throughout the year, we'd be okay. We run into the crisis when everybody wants water in July, and our system can't provide that amount in that short of time. And so that's when this would show up. If watering increased even slightly, a few percentage points in July, when we're meeting our maximum capacity, then we would not be able to provide the amount of water at the pressures that people are desiring. We would see significant pressure drops, particularly in the higher elevations of each zone.
But even on top of that, I mean, I know the state and other sources have come out and said that we need to be kind of at a certain level and that the cities are using too much water. And based on the water shares that we get, and I know there's a whole calculation that goes into what we get, but if we're using up too much water now, I mean, that's going to hurt us in the coming years also. So it's not about just us being able to pump water, which is a huge concern, but it's also that we're using up more water than we're allotted.
Right. And then the state is coming out with more documentation, I guess, of their projected plans. They're I mean, restricting mandatory metering of jurisdictions watering, similar to what we have to do with culinary water. These things are all being thrown out on the table right now. I've seen where they're discussing a limitation of how much grass you can have as a percentage of your property. These are things that the state's actively moving forward on, and we probably ought to be addressing for the future.
Now, is it possible for a resident to install a meter on their own system, or does this have to be done by the city?
No. I mean, you can meter your system if you'd like. I mean, anybody could install that to see what they are consuming and make adjustments accordingly.
Okay.
Jeff, why couldn't you educate people and ask them to water a certain amount of time? It sounds like you're saying saying that education has to stop as soon as we start restricting usage.
No. No, I don't want to leave that thought.
Okay.
No, I'm agreeing that education's important.
Right. And then my second, I'd want to keep educating. My second question is, and it's more kind of a comment too. I don't know exactly what the city expects of Mead Water. There's the state watering guidelines, but you know, going there and trying to figure out exactly how many gallons of water are going through my system is really confusing. Whereas I think if we said water no more than 20 minutes for 2 days a week or 3 days a week, at least I would know what's expected by the city. And I think that
that doesn't work based on everybody's yards, though, because I can't tell one resident to water for 20 minutes when they're on a steep hillside and they have to change and water at different intervals.
And you might have a couple exceptions, but at least there would be some expectation that's set. Because right now, there's no expectation that's really set clear.
Have you read the newsletter this month?
I have not.
And actually,
it's in the newsletter.
It's been
this month
on our website for the past several years, and I'm looking at it right now. It has it by month, and it tells you for May, it's 21 minutes every four days.
I was just looking at that.
Yeah, and that's been in our newsletter on the city website for several years.
Yes.
For example, though, on my yard, if I water for 21 minutes on two stations, I've got a swamp that could rival anything in Florida.
Right. Mm-hmm. And this is obviously maximum, right? And it might even be 7 minutes and then wait half an hour and then seven more minutes. But we have given clear direction on time by month.
Right. But I've got two zones in the back that, like you said, I have to break it up and water in 7, 7 and 20. So all of a sudden I'm watering that same zone in 30 minutes. Just because of the way sprinklers are designed.
Well, I guess what I'm just trying to state is that I don't want the impression to go out that the city has never indicated what our expectations are, because I think that has been listed every year for several years.
I wanted to reiterate that same point. I've read that. We've had it many times.
Yeah.
And what it means is just, like you say, I mean, a drip system can go for 60 minutes and use a third less than, or a tenth less than any other system. So you just have to be prudent is what you're saying.
But the city also has to be pretty vague in it. We can't say you have to water for this amount of time, because it doesn't work in all scenarios. And we have to give people the ability to adjust based on their terrain, landscape, and needs.
But it's a total amount of water, right? So if I say you should water for 20 minutes total every 4 days, what I do is I set mine to water for 5 minutes at four different intervals separated by a couple hours, because I also am on a slope, right? But that's still the 20 minutes. It's still doing the 20 minutes, right?
Yeah, but not even all yards need 20 minutes, and some require more than 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, we can't.
I mean, the real problem is before I redid my system properly, I had a very poorly engineered water system in my yard put in by the previous owner. When the city initially put in restrictions back in, I believe it was 2008, when we had really severe restrictions, the city said, here's the certain days on an even address you're allowed to water.
Right.
So you know what I did? I turn it on full blast at 2 a.m. and then I turn it on full blast at 10 p.m. because I knew I needed gobs of water coming out in order to keep my grass green. And being a naive new resident, I thought, I want to keep my grass green. My system isn't engineered well. That's the only option I have to do. And I suspect a lot of residents are in that boat. They have older systems. Mismatched heads, and all they know is if I put it on for 20 minutes a day, it looks yellow. If I put it on for 30 minutes a day, it looks green.
Right. And the point is, we even point out there are ways to check it. I mean, we say here, you know, this amount of water equals a half an inch. So anyone can turn on their sprinklers and set a dish out there and collect and know what your sprinklers put out to create a half an inch. Well, I mean, I know that's to some people that's foreign, but we say that to do that. I mean, we don't just say 21 minutes. We say we're trying to use – I mean, I'm reading it right here. It says generally one irrigation is equal to a half an inch of applied water, which is roughly equal to 20 minutes with pop-ups. Well, if you have rotors, you don't get 1 inch. You don't get a half an inch in 20 minutes. It takes like 45 minutes to get a half an inch out of rotor. So, I mean, you've got to be a little bit proactive and figure out what your system produces and measure it yourself. It's not that difficult.
And we have given information for the USU extension, which will come out for free, and do that water analysis for any resident. I just want to add, though, that water pressure is obviously a concern, and taxing the system is a concern. But one concern that I have, and I think a lot of residents in our city share, is – the fact is, in July and August, we are dumping a whole lot of culinary water into our PI system. So our culinary redundant well that was meant to be a redundant well for our culinary system, 100% of that water is going into the PI system to supplement because we don't have enough PI water. And so utilizing that much culinary water in our PI system for me is a huge concern.
Do we have to treat that? We do have to treat that too, right?
No.
Because culinary is going into the PI system.
But it is true that we do run the Cottonwood well 24/7.
July and August.
Use it for, and at times we've had to augment that with Harvey well water also.
Which tells us that we're using too much.
Yeah, for me, one of the biggest motivations for water conservation is to reduce the amount of culinary water going to our system. We need our drinking water.
Absolutely.
And that needs to be protected.
I agree.
Mayor, Council, one more thing that we was asked about is, what are other cities doing as far as restrictions, and how are they making those work? Could we have Chandler just address those? He's done some research on that.
Absolutely. Sure.
So we went around to the other cities that kind of in North Utah Valley and looked at what their water restrictions were. And really, from what Cedar Hills is doing, which essentially is, as far as regulations, it's simply education. There's no real regulations. So we're on one end of the spectrum, if you can imagine that, to what Lehigh, you may have seen what they're proposing, on the other end of the spectrum, where it's maybe a more draconian type system of two days of watering a week, and then they even go on to limit no hard surface watering, pool cover, mandated pool covers, water may not spray above fountains, pond surfaces, recreational sprinkling prohibited, water toys are also prohibited. So they went kind of the complete opposite end of us. And even in discussions I've had with multiple cities, I know the question was asked earlier, as far as regulations go, will it work? And the response I got from other cities after talking to them was very skeptical. You can probably imagine that they saw the same problem that we saw back when we did regulations, was that there was actually an increase in consumption. So doing some research, Southern Nevada Water Authority's Water Conservation Program, and they have put together what is called a conservation toolbox. And they've actually seen quite a bit of success from this. And just to kind of measure their success, the Southern Nevada has consumed 15 billion gallons less water in 2007 than it did in 2002, despite the addition of 400,000 new homes and 40 million annual visitors. So what they did is they put together a set of regulation, water pricing incentives, and education to elicit the necessary community response to reduce demands. And they're in a bit of a different situation than us based on their climate, but I think that the principle holds. Recently we had in the Planning Commission a discussion on Xeriscape, and that's going to be before this body in the May 19th meeting. So we talked about xeriscaping and expanding the rules or the code in the city code to allow for more xeriscaping. But my point that I made to the Planning Commission, I'll make it to you right now, is that if Cedar Hills is an established community with established lawns, established yards, to ask somebody to rip out their established yard and put in xeriscaping at this point without an incentive, you're probably not going to see a whole lot of community buy-in on something like that. So what this Southern Nevada Water Authority did was they did water smart landscape rebate programs where they basically incentivized people to reduce the amount of landscape water that, or the landscaping that required water or irrigable water to be poured onto their lawn. So going back to what the cities have before you, you can see that, you know, in Alpine, they most of the cities are doing a three-day watering schedule based on your address. And a few of them have limited the watering during the day. When speaking with Lehigh, they talked about the demand on pressure when the pressure spikes during the night and then drops completely during the day, or the other way around, sorry. They saw that as a negative. So there's a full spectrum here of what cities are doing, and I don't think that there's really a consensus. And I found that Pleasant Grove actually has two, I don't know if they're part-time or full-time, but they have two water enforcement officers. So that's kind of what you would need.
Does Highland have no punishment at all for overwatering?
None.
None at all. They don't slap your hand, no. They don't call you up, they don't do anything.
When I talked to them, because I saw their water restrictions online and I thought I'd call them and see what they were going to say. And it really is self-policing. There's no incentive to turn your water off on a day you're not supposed to water because nobody's going to be watching you. Mm-hmm. So I thought it's probably a very effective way to run a program.
Are they PI metered?
Are they on a PI system, David? They're on a PI system.
Yeah, they have PI, but they are not metered.
They're not metered.
Okay. So they're getting kind of like Cedar Hills residents free water.
A lot of cities are. You know, Highland's situation, to flesh it out a little bit more, is that I think they would like to enforce.
They would.
They don't have the money to enforce.
They're in the exact same boat that we are, that they're a city that, as far as staffing expenses go, it's hard to find the money to hire two people where it wasn't budgeted for last year.
See, and that's what I'm looking at on this chart, is if you look at the bigger cities, they have tougher restrictions, harder fines, but they also have the staff to go out and police it. If you look at Highland, Cedar Hills, and Alpine, I mean, Alpine's a little bit of the exception to that.
It's Highland and Linden, really. Linden doesn't limit the amount of days you can water. They just have no daytime watering.
Right.
There's no enforcement there.
But really, the ones that are enforcing it are the bigger cities that have the staff and the personnel and the resources to do it. And I think that's what we're struggling with.
Aren't we straining at a gnat and swallowing a camel, though, if we could do that? We're willing to spend $2 million, but not $22,000 to monitor it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's the thing is in talking with these people that even are enforcing it, mm-hmm. they don't anticipate a decrease in consumption.
Okay, so why is every city around us doing restrictions but us, and you're saying that none of them think it's working? Why are they doing it then?
I can give you my opinion on that. That's really, it's to placate the public, to say we're doing something about the water. But really, when you look at the hard numbers at the end of the year, I don't think that you're going to see a decrease in consumption.
I think it's actually going to go up.
I think we should placate the public 1 year. Say this: we're going to try it 1 year. Everyone's telling us we should do it. That's what I'm hearing from people. They don't want to spend $2 million. They want us to at least give them a chance to try to reduce with restrictions in place. If it doesn't work,
but here's the problem, Rob.
Yeah.
We've spent a lot of time educating residents mm-hmm. how to water properly.
Right.
Last year, we did a huge campaign to get them. And every time we bring up more restrictive water restrictions, we get pushback from precisely those people who have been good citizens and undergone conservation measures. They say, look, now you're forcing me to water on certain days, and that makes me use more water than if I did it the right way. You're going to tell me 3 days a week when I actually wanted to do it and space it out and do it 2 days a week or something like that. Or you're going to tell me only on these days, like Monday and Friday, when I wanted to do a rotating three-day schedule, because that's what my timers allow me to do. So I worry that we spend $22,000, we get no results for it, and we make the public who are actually conserving water angry at us mm-hmm. because we're forcing them to do measures that are counter to what the state watering guidelines are and what we've been educating them on.
So I think
what I would recommend mm-hmm. instead of a daily water schedule and zones and all this enforcement, which I think is necessary if we go that route, I would recommend we do a light touch on watering restrictions. I would recommend that we restrict watering between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. and say no daytime watering. That's a waste because that evaporates mm-hmm. water.
But
do the water during the evening, early morning hours. That's easy to enforce. Staff are on the call during those times. We don't have to hire anybody extra to patrol during the nighttime.
The problem that we had with that, though, in the past years are that sometimes there are so many people using it at night that water pressures are low in certain areas.
That's
and
right.
So we've told those residents, try to water during the non-peak times so they have enough water pressure to actually water their lawns.
Okay, so reduce that a little bit. Cut it out for the hottest hours of the day, you know, 11 p.m. to 5 p.m. or something like that.
Well, you know, I'm not sure I buy that argument because I've heard that the biggest detriment to effective watering is not watering during the day. It's actually watering when it's windy, when nothing is going on.
Yeah,
but there's a point to be made that if you have everyone trying to water at the same time, then water pressure is going to go down because so many people are trying to use the system. So I like the approach that Highland and Pleasant Grove have taken in terms of they're not saying when you should water. And I don't really care when Cedar Hills residents water. I just care how much they water. And so, you know, my recommendation for whatever it's worth is to let's not tell them when they can water.
Oh, I thought
Highland and Pleasant Grove do tell them.
They do tell them. They say 3 days a week. You're
based on addresses.
Even addresses are Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
No, I'm looking at this here, and it says Highland tells them 3 days. Okay, so let me just clarify what I'm saying. 3 days is fine, but in the additional restrictions, they're not telling them like what hours they can water.
Time of day.
That's what I'm saying. And neither is Pleasant Grove telling them what hours they're. In both instances, Highland and Pleasant Grove are saying limited to 3 days, no Sunday watering, but they're not saying what hours they can water. So I'm glad you asked me to clarify that. That's what I'm saying is I don't care what hours that they water. I just care how much they water. How much water they use.
And see, I'm not convinced these are going to be effective.
I'm not either.
Because they'll just water a lot on those 3 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I would rather not spend money on enforcement. I would rather continue our education efforts and say, this is how you are a good citizen in Cedar Hills. You follow these guidelines. I'd put out some very simple instructions like Mike is talking about for here's how to put out some cups and measure your coverage. Based on that measurement, here's the next step. Set your sprinklers this long based on the type of hedge you have. And we educate residents. We tell them the right thing to do. And I would plan for we need to do metering. It's the only reasonable way to address this issue and to really reduce water coverage. And let's wait for the Bowen and Collins study to tell us how to approach that in the best way.
So there's a couple of things I do know, which is that in the past, we as a city have tried various approaches. One of them, which is to use odd evens. One of them was to use zones, neither of which received the type of results that we would want. I am fairly confident in saying that we spend the approximately $22,700 for part-time employees to enforce at the end of the summer. I'm not sure that our watering habits will have changed that much. And so what I do know is that I'm not sure that the city has bought into this yet, unfortunately. And so we need to do whatever we can in order to get that buy-in, because spending money on meters is an expensive proposal. I wish we would have done it when we put in PI. It would have cost substantially less. And that was a mistake. We should have done that. What I hope we don't do is wait another 10 years and instead of it costing what it costs today, have it be double or triple. So I saw an email today that says that the state's already looking at how they may...
force our hand, actually.
Well, how they may monitor how cities use their water. And so if 10 years from now, all of a sudden, the state comes out and says, mandatory metering in every city. How much do you think the cost of metering is going to be? Because all of a sudden you got the contractors that are trying to put the business in, so they're saying, okay, well, I used to charge this much, now I'm charging this times five, and it's going to be a lot more expensive. So we really need to have a robust discussion again this year. I thought that we had done that last year, had a town hall meeting, had a water conservation committee. I've talked about it endlessly. Some people want me to stop talking about it. I don't think that I'm going to. But still, that's where we are. And so it's up to you guys to decide what you want to do. I'm glad we're having this discussion. And so did I cut you off? Were you wanting to say something?
Okay. Can I make a comment back to Daniel's earlier discussion on watering times? I think it was 2005 or 6 that the state started their program in which we'd water at night, not during the day. And the city did adopt ordinance, and the ordinance was no watering between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., I believe. And then a couple of years later, it was changed to 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. is what I'm remembering that ordinance. So we do currently have an ordinance for watering time, which creates a bit of an issue with the wind issue, and we have asked a couple of residents to water during the day because of the water pressure difference while we was doing some repair work. So, but that is on, as far as I understand, that is an ordinance that we currently have.
See, my worry is that right now we are already taxing our system pretty much to its capacity, if not beyond its capacity. We're also dumping in a huge amount of culinary water to supplement our PI usage. And to me, we're running a huge risk if all of a sudden we throw restrictions in place and we actually see our usage go up. We're now actually causing a bigger problem than if we would have just let it stay the way it was. And I'm not always happy with the status quo, but to me, the status quo right now looks slightly better than putting restrictions in place and running the risk, which is a huge risk, of damaging our system or not being able to provide water.
I mentioned this before, but the reason I watered more right when restrictions were in place last time, I was one that did that, is because I wasn't watering much before I heard restrictions were coming, and then I read we might run out of water in July. And I thought, man, I've got to get my yard green before we run out of water in July. Because that's what it said, that whatever I read was saying we could run out of water in July. And I thought, right, man, I've been underwatering trying to help out. I'm going to water how much I can and increase it because I want my yard to be green enough to make it through this July when we're not going to have water. I think that we need to make it clear that if we're using three times as much as we should, and we've had the water to cover three times as much as we should, if everyone just waters the right amount, we'll have twice as much as we need. And then we just need to... But I'll just tell you right now, I will not vote for spending $2 million on the meters until we've at least tried restrictions. And I think that's the feedback I'm getting from the residents, that they want us to at least try 1 year putting restrictions in place, strict restrictions, and at least trying to enforce them. It won't be perfect. There's going to be people that have different yards that are exceptions that we might have to look at and say, you know, we're not going to find them because they have a unique situation here. There might be a few places where we have to use judgment, but it seems like we're always looking for the exception instead of saying, let's put some rules out there that just people can follow and try to reduce the usage this year. Let's see if we can reduce the usage.
Yeah, but we're also creating a huge problem with doing that, because if we tell a handful of residents, oh, you can water outside of the normal issue, we're now painting a huge target on them for all of their neighbors and people in that area. Mm-hmm. So no matter what we do, I mean, we're causing...
There will be a little bit of...
bigger problem.
Right. But those will be the exceptions. We'll work through it.
But also your comment about that we've had enough water and that we have enough water isn't entirely correct either, because as we've said, we're using three times more than the recommended,
right,
but we're also using a huge amount of culinary water to supplement
that. But it was designed that way. And we have designed to supplement.
That was designed
as a backup. It's a backup well for our culinary system.
Right.
It's not designed so that we can pump culinary into our PI system.
I think it was designed that way as a backup to both systems.
I don't believe so, David.
It was designed to go both directions. It can go to the PI system. It can go to the culinary. We knew that our consumption on the PI was so extreme that we needed to have it be able to dump to the PI system as well as go to the culinary. We should have enough other water rights to not tap into that culinary system as much as we do. But the issue is our consumption is high, so we are forced to use that well exclusively for pressurized irrigation during the hottest parts of the summer.
And we don't use it at all during the winter usually, right?
We go back and forth between the two different wells.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, the Harvey well has had an issue during the winter. In fact, it's down right now. So we are being forced to use the other culinary well. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So are we strictly on the Cottonwood well right now for the city?
So we're using the Cottonwood well, and we're also using the AF turnout, the AF booster.
Okay, so if we have a problem right now bringing the Harvey well back up, we're in essence going to have a disaster. I don't know how else to term it.
I think you're making the point that I've been trying to
make. No, absolutely I am.
Which is that our problem, we have enough water shares.
Right.
Or water rights, I think is the right term. And so the problem is that our system is built to only push so much water through it. And if we had the Cottonwood well or the Harvey well go down in July or August, then you're trying to pump as much water through the system with one pump. And that's where I see that the math just does not work.
Right.
That you can't pump as much water through with one pump as you would with two, and that's where massive restrictions and cutting back would take place. And so this is not an easy decision. And so I understand Mr. Crawley's point about not wanting to spend money on this. I don't want to be 10 years. I won't be in doing this 10 years. But in 10 years, who's ever doing this? If we haven't done it, then they're spending $5 or $6 million trying to meter because the states require it when they should have done it earlier. Sometimes I have to be careful how I say this, but or maybe I won't. I just think sometimes the city listens too much to small, loud voices as opposed to doing the right thing. And so if we would have metered when we put the PI system in, it would have cost a fraction of what it costs. If we would have finished the basement we were doing, the rec center, it would have cost a fraction of what it cost. Sometimes, you just take the political heat and do the thing that's right.
I think it's also important to understand that we have to look at circumstances today, not circumstances from several years ago. And I wasn't on the council, so I don't know all of the reasons why the redundant culinary well was built and what the intentions were. But where we are today, from a drought perspective, is significantly different from where we were when that well was built. And so we can't just say, well, 10 years ago, this is what this was anticipated for. Things have changed. And we have culinary water is not an unlimited resource. We already have I've already heard concerns about the water levels in our wells. And so to treat it as if it's just going to be there forever is, in my opinion, naive.
Hey, David, have we gotten any feedback as far as the water levels in our wells? It seems like we're going to get that soon. Is any of that back yet?
Yeah, so we did get so we've been able to pull the pump out of the Harvey well.
Okay.
We were able to compare the current water levels with the levels when the pump was set, and it has dropped 47 feet in that well, which is a significant drop.
How many years is that?
That was drilled in 99, I believe. So it's been 16 years, yeah. 500 feet. It's
only 4, so it's 25% down. So it's dropping about 3 feet per year. And how many feet do we have left before we start sucking air?
It depends on where the screens are set. And so we will be videoing that and determining what level that pump needs to be reset at.
How many feet deep is there? So how many feet do we have right now of water in
the
well?
I want to say that well is about 540 feet deep total.
Uh-huh.
And our well, yeah,
water's at 350, and we're losing about 3 feet per year.
Well,
but
there's not a straight line. Uh-huh. To say 3 feet per year would be erroneous to say that's a straight.
That's just an average.
Straight line.
That's an average. Yep.
You know, I'll tell you, it will accelerate as conditions persist. As these drought conditions persist, more cities will rely on well water to supplement their irrigation systems. As more cities put their straw deeper into the ground and take more water out, the rate of decline will increase as well.
Mm-hmm. But I will say this, the years that we had floods, which will come again, eventually there'll be flood years. The years that there's floods, the water table rises significantly also and makes up for a lot of the years that it goes down.
I don't doubt that there's going to be another flood.
Mm-hmm.
but that's not a strategy. That's just a hope.
No,
And so as a city council, you know, I would encourage you to make decisions based on fact rather than hopes.
Well, and Mayor, we do have data going back to the 1970s on water levels for wells throughout the Utah County area, in fact, throughout the entire state of Utah. I shared that report with the council. And if you look at the graph for water levels over the past 3 or 4 decades, they are trending downwards. Mm-hmm. It's not like we have enough wet years to reset it back to where they were. Well levels are going down, and that's a natural consequence of growth. Our population is expected to double by 2050. That's not going to leave us with more water. That's going to definitely continue to draw water levels down, regardless of whether we have wet years.
Okay. We've had a good, healthy discussion here, and so this is an action item, and so someone like to make a motion of whatever form, go right ahead.
I motion that we make restrictions this year and put some fines in place, and if they don't produce any decrease in usage, then we look at other alternatives such as metering next year.
Okay, everyone hear his motion? Yes, yes. Okay.
I don't think it's specific enough. But
what's that?
I don't think it's specific enough.
Right. There's seven, I have eight questions that if we vote yes on this, then there's eight additional questions.
Okay, let's deal with the motion that I have, which is I have a motion that has been made. There is time for discussion, but I need to have a second if there's going to be one. Would someone like to second this motion? Mr. Crowley, there is not a second.
Okay.
So, would someone else like to make a different motion?
I think we might need additional discussion first. I mean, I would like to know from an enforcement perspective, how will those be enforced? What fines were you thinking of being in place? From the map that we got, it looked like we were going to be actually quite as harsh as maybe not as harsh as far as water guns and things like that, but we were going to limit to 2 days per week per house, which is less water than going to an odd even watering day schedule. So even with that, with only allowing residents to water twice a week, we still feel like we wouldn't see a reduction from last year.
I'll have Jeff talk to that, but as far as enforcement, we would, you know, go to the 2 days per week. Our thoughts are we don't see significant savings when we go to restrictions. And as we've called the other cities and talked to them about their water restrictions and the savings that they've had in their systems, it is insignificant. And it takes a big burden on enforcement. I think if we have restrictions, we should enforce them. Otherwise, don't have restrictions.
And
would you switch to 3 days a week later on when it gets hotter?
No.
Is there a way to do that with SMAP? Are you proposing that you'd stay at 2 days per week the whole summer?
Go ahead.
That is one of the concerns, is that if we go to odd-even days, then we're not allowing those who want to follow the state recommendations to do so. If we go to 2 days a week, then we're not going to allow people to meet the minimum state recommendation of 3 days a week or every third day.
Right.
During the summer.
So my question is, if we adopted a plan where it was 2 days a week during May and early June, and then we ramped up to 3 days a week to meet state minimum watering guidelines, could this zone map fit that way? You would just say this zone gets these 3 days and this other zone gets these other 3 days, and we'd have to, I mean, certainly there's an educational effort there, but it would work for the system, yes?
It's possible. It's quite complicated. I was trying to keep it simple so we could present it to the public and they'd be able to understand it. They set their timer, but I'm understanding what you're saying, and it would be very convenient if they was able to just toggle their timer to say it's going to water every 3 days. But because of the number of days in a week, it always cycles around to a different day. So 1 week
That's right.
could be on.
So, I mean, I think in terms of education of residents, we can do this fairly simply. I've got a custom Google map that I did during the meeting here, and I drew out the zones exactly the way you guys have them. And so a resident could put in their address, and it pops right up on the map, and it
the map would tell them what their restriction days are. So as far as education, I think we can do it. What I'm not convinced of is that, as you say, you've got this rotating system. So if I tell a resident they're going to do 3 days a week, I'd have to tell them exactly what 3 days. It can't just be whichever 3 days you want.
And it's true. And then people are going to have to reset their clocks or their meters each time.
Conversation. If we change the schedule in mid-June, then they'd have to change their meters in mid-June.
But if we are asking them to follow the state watering guidelines, they're having to change their clocks every month anyway, or they should be.
Should be.
Well, here's my thoughts. All these cities, they recognize the state's watering guidelines as well, yet they've decided to do something slightly different. Okay? Correct. And so they're trying to solve a problem. I'm pretty convinced that while all of us are concerned about how much water we use and conserving, the majority of residents, I think, turn on their sprinkling system in the spring. They turn it off in the fall. And I'm not sure that they fully understand what the state's recommendations are up to this point. Like Mrs. Reese has said many times, it's on our website. This is what the state recommends we're supposed to be doing. I'm not sure we are as a city. And so I really think that an attempt to do something.
I do think, as stated earlier, maybe I wasn't real clear on it, that a lot of the jurisdictions that are looking at these, they're not following the state guidelines, is the fact that they have to refill their larger reservoirs, right, in order for them to have the capacity. And so they're gauging their watering times on how fast they can fill their facilities, their storage, where we're kind of in a opposite situation here, where we don't have a large reservoir to fill over time with a small stream. We need to continually provide the water during the peak usage, like you say, June, July, and August, at a consistent rate. That's where our dilemma comes in.
I will say one area where I do agree with Rob is that from talking with residents and viewing things that are posted online, I also get the impression that residents feel like we should be doing some kind of restriction of water. And a lot of residents see waste going on, and I think the perception is that we as a city are allowing that because there are no penalties for anybody who is watering every single day for hours a day. And so by not having restrictions, I think a lot of residents are saying, look, we agree there should be, everyone should be conserving, but as long as you allow it, there's nothing that can be done about it. And so I do agree that I think residents are asking for us to do something. And if it doesn't work, I think we need to clearly communicate that. But right now, I think the perception is that we're just, we know there's a problem and we're not doing anything.
I couldn't agree more. I think that's it, is that the recommendation that I think that we need to come to terms with is recommending some sort of restrictions and rationing, if you will, knowing that it flies in the face of what the state recommends. But this is a year where many cities are trying to do something in an attempt to stave off a problem in the summer. So it's up to you guys. I would encourage you to maybe, Mr. Crawley, rethink your motion, make it slightly different or whatever, and try and get some more people on board with that. But
Someone else can propose it. Maybe it'll get a vote.
So are you recommending then we have some kind of watering restrictions?
Absolutely, I am. Yeah, and
even though you don't think they'll work, just because we need to somehow show residents that we're trying. I'm
not convinced it is going to work. We've tried various things in the past, and it may not work. But attempting to do something this year, and with having some enforcement, we're going to have to find some money to do that, is probably the smart thing to do.
But that could also
I hope at the end of the summer I'm wrong, that it actually worked.
That could also be a huge backfire on our system. I mean, we're taking a risk by doing that because we could way overtax our system to the point that we're causing more damage to it.
If we're restricting?
Mm-hmm.
How would we be taxing the system if we're restricting?
Because if we've got residents that, just like Rob said, think, oh, there's restrictions in place, so now I've got to dump X number of gallons on my yard, and all of a sudden our usage goes up, that means we're either overworking our pumps or we're dumping more culinary into the system.
That is possible.
But my point was it's in the presentation. If we're saying, hey, we're going to run out of water in July, then in June I'm going to be watering more if I'm trying to keep my
yard. But that's what I'm saying. That's a huge risk for us to take.
But we don't say that. We're not going to run out of water. We're going to reduce our water.
We're being told by Mr. Mod that we need to do twice a week restrictions in order to make it work for our city because of the way our system is built and our smaller reservoirs. What that's going to mean is that come summer, residents are going to say, you're only letting me water 2 days a week. I need to put more water on my lawn in order to keep it green than 2 days a week. Uh-huh. State guidelines are 3 days a week. Therefore, they're going to water twice each of those 2 days, once in the morning, once in the evening, just like I did once upon a time when we had these restrictions.
I think we should go 3 days. And
so we, let me throw.
They're going to basically watering 4 days a week.
So let me throw something else out there because I know quite a few properties in our city that have well over 20 zones. I mean, I have 15 on mine because it's more effective for me to do it that way. But I know properties that have 25 and 30 zones where they can't get through a whole watering schedule in one night. And so, I mean, it's probably a little unique for some of these people, but we're still causing them major problems. And going back to what we said before, we're painting a huge target on them because now we're giving them an exception to water outside the guidelines, and everybody else is going to see that. And then we're going to run into the same problem with our golf course and parks and everywhere else because we're going to have to water outside of those times also.
I think what's your recommendation that we just continue to educate? And no restrictions?
So it's not working. Oh,
I don't know. I'm stuck like everybody else. I don't know what the right answer is.
So there's definitely a risk to doing something, and there's a risk to doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so
absolutely.
You guys got to figure out which risk that you want to take.
I do think that Rob is correct, though, that we are not going to get resident support for water metering our PI water if we haven't tried restrictions.
No, I would agree with that.
And that's why I'm willing to do it.
So what's the goal? If the goal is to eventually get to a metering system, I think you've got to get people on board with that by showing that we tried everything else and nothing else is working.
But then we've got to make a good effort instead of saying, hey, look, we're trying.
I think we've made a really good effort. I think staff has done a great job over the past several years.
I'm talking about a good effort on restrictions and fines.
But that's the problem. If we spend $25,000 and don't get anything out of it, then where are we at? We just, in essence, blew $25,000.
So are we willing to...
That we could have put towards education.
Are we willing to take a risk with one-tenth the price of the total project just to see if there's a way
around? I don't know. I haven't weighed in on this, but I kind of feel like anything we spend at this point is a waste of money. The $21,000, I think it's like watering in the wind. And I think it just flitters away.
So let me ask you a question then. So do you think that metering is the right thing to do?
Yes.
I do too. So if
I think it's the free market way. I think it's getting what you pay for and using, and I think there's no other way to look at it other than it's the free market system.
I completely agree with you. So let me ask you a question. If spending $22,000 in an effort to restrict gets you closer to doing the thing that you think is right, is it worth it?
I still say no. I say we could put in restrictions, voluntary restrictions, with possible fees. Or I think we could have, you know, a violation that says a $50 fine, maybe a $200 second offense that could be – I don't want to send out someone going around and sending out those type of violations.
So let me see if I understand what you're saying.
But if we had them on the books, at least we could enforce it.
So, okay.
You know, we do have an enforcement person.
Uh-huh.
If there's gross negligence, at least we say we have a little bit of teeth, maybe just fangs in this deal. That's kind of where I'm leaning.
So if I understand you correctly, then you're saying put some restrictions in place, but don't enforce it to the extent that's recommended, use our current enforcement officer to enforce it. And if that works, great. But
and then also I would welcome the Boning Collins study to see what they say in the future. I don't know, you know, exactly what it's going to cost to meter everything. I mean, we've been bantering out of this $2 million. Mm-hmm. We don't know that that's real, do we?
I think it's pretty close. I think you're in the ballpark. And so it may be a little bit less. I don't think it's more, but
and we don't know what the payback of that is either. I mean,
earlier tonight that there's a possibility that there could be enough savings
for
the meters to cover that cost.
Exactly. I mean, obviously if people overwater, their water bill is going to double or triple or quadruple, right? Mm-hmm. Those meters, thank you, capitalists, you used the water, you paid for it, but you paid for the rest of the meters in the city. I think that's fair.
So can I throw out just kind of a
I don't know what the number is. I'm just saying that I don't know what the payback is. I think the original study that I was looking at showed a payback of 12 to 15 years of meters, something like that, back in the original PI study, if we put meters in at that point. Is that somewhere in the ballpark? David, I think we were talking about that.
Yeah, that's right. That's in the original Gilson engineering report.
And so, you know, I don't know what it is, but certainly I don't want to spend money that is wasted. I would rather spend $25,000 and buy 25 meters with it, honestly.
Well, that was actually the random idea I wanted to throw out. So if we take $2 million divided by 2,500 homes, that's roughly about $800 per home.
Right.
If we take $25,000 and look at $800 a pop, that means we could install roughly 31 meters. What if we went to our biggest water users and said, hey, we're willing to help out, chip in, whatever, give you an incentive to allow us to do this now, and maybe we start chipping away at that iceberg and see what we can do. I mean, 31 meters now is better than none.
I'm not opposed to that.
I mean, to me, it just seems like $25,000, I mean, that's a big chunk of money for our city to spend.
It is. It's like watering the wind. I really do agree with that. It's just like
I'm wondering if we can't put it to a better use.
I've got a thought, too. How many policemen do we have monitoring American Fork on average? I'll ask our lieutenant back there. Is that – How many policemen do we have monitoring Cedar Hills at any given time on average? Is it one or two? Usually one or two. I'm going to guess one or two. If you don't want to comment, that's fine. I'm going to guess one or two.
It's hard to answer that. There could be seven officers up here at all one time.
Right.
There could be zero.
Right, right. On average. So
there's four officers out on every shift. So there's four officers available.
Okay. My point is going to be that I don't see policemen very often, but I know that if I speed on a regular basis, eventually I'm going to get a ticket. And that's kind of what I think about PI metering or PI monitoring too, is that if we set the rules, set the fines there, people are not going to want to break the rules and risk getting a fine, even if there's only one person that's a staff that we currently have. I don't see that we have to spend, you know, have two people full time in addition to our current staff, maybe one person. But just the fact that you could get a ticket or a fine is going to make you more likely to follow the rules. And, you know, I think it's the same with traffic tickets.
I think we're headed towards a motion here. I think that I like a lot of these ideas, and maybe a motion looks something like have some restrictions in place 3 days a week. Don't tell them what hours to water. Let them water it. Have some fines in case they violate it. The problem you're going to have is enforcement. But maybe the fact that you've got some fines in place is encouragement for people to say to themselves, well, I don't want to be the one that gets caught.
The gross, negligent people. Yes.
So I don't know.
Gary, you just said 3 days a week, but our recommendation for Mr. Mogg was 2 days a week based on the design of our system. Can we do a three-day a week?
If there's no
odds and evens.
If there's no specific time.
I don't care whether it's 2 days a week or 3 days a week. I'm just looking at what most of these other cities are doing is that other than Lehigh, they're all doing 3 days. And so if our, you know.
2 days complicates it. 3 days is
more intuitive. Mr. Mogg and Mr. Bunker think that 2 days a week, you know, it's going to help us get there, and Then that's fine. It's up to you guys to figure out what you want this to look like.
Could I make a motion? I would like to attempt a motion.
Fire away.
You're willing.
I was just in the middle of saying one thing, which is I understand that it could be 2 or 3 days per week in terms of abstractly it could be 2 or 3 days a week. What I'm concerned about is that our public works city manager, our city engineer, is telling us that he doesn't think we should do 3 days a week because of the way our system is built.
So my understanding of that and my response would be if there is restrictions of 3 days a week watering and there's no time specified or days specified, it shouldn't affect our watering capacity. It may reduce it because you have those that water every day, but now they're going to change to 3 times a week.
Right. So if we tell everyone you can water 3 days a week, but we're not going to specify which days, I don't know how to enforce that.
We can't.
There's no way.
No. I think if you go every other day in odds and evens, then it will spread it out so that you've got it spread out across all 6 days that you're allowing to water. Have one day be a water by hand day on the
every other day. So you're going to let people water
3 days a week.
Monday,
Wednesday, Friday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. That's the most common. I think it makes sense.
Yeah, we were just told that that's not going to work with our system. If you put all of the even addresses in the entire city 3 days a week, they're all going to suck water at the same time, and our system can't handle it.
But I think Jeff's saying if we allow them to water any time in that 24-hour period instead of just the night, that will alleviate some of that pressure.
No, I was thinking if there was not a day specified to water,
just tell them
which
three
is
days,
an enforcement problem.
No, you can't be a voluntary system. You've got to have it enforceable.
But if we did a Monday, Wednesday, Friday for even addresses and the other days for odd addresses, we can't handle that in our system. Our system's not
because it's putting too much demand at the peak time.
I
there's a chance.
That,
well, he's telling us that's what it is.
So the issue there is when we tell odd or even addresses to water on certain days, they all set their clocks. We perform a diurnal curve, which means when is the peak demand on the system. And from what we see, it's early in the morning, 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, we peak the system, and all those people use the water on that day. So pressures do decrease. And in the hottest part of the summer, that's when it's difficult for the system to give that instantaneous flow, that instantaneous demand to the system. Because we do not have large reservoirs like other cities have, we pump every gallon of water that we consume in this city. It is pumped. So we have to pump into the system directly to keep up with the demand. And that's, that's a drawback of living on the hillside. We have a lot of elevation change between the upper zone and the lower zone. And other cities have big, large reservoirs at certain elevations that can feed their system all day long. We don't have that ability. So can we try it? Yeah, we could try it.
But it's really hard to retrain people, too. If we make a decision and then go, oh, wait, this was the wrong decision, it's really hard to get those people to relearn and rethink that whole process. So we're right back where we started.
I know. Hasn't that been the problem all along, though?
I know. We're right back where we started, and we don't have a better answer.
Well, so I guess the question I have, it was sounding like you're willing to put in place restrictions, but you're not willing to spend the $22,000 to enforce them. You'd rather have a lower cost enforcement. So do you want to do the restrictions that are recommended, which is that everybody gets only 2 days a week, and we have this zone map all set up and ready to go?
I'd rather do that than nothing.
And then you only get to water 2 days a week. When it gets to be July, most people will probably say, well, I guess I'll water both night and morning so I can get enough water on my lawn. But,
that might be the case.
But now we're watering 4 times a week instead of 3.
Yeah. But at least they're not watering 7 days a week.
That's why you guys get paid the big bucks. It's because you got to make a
decision. So I see really two possible motions here.
Yep.
Right? There's a motion that says we're going to go with the watering restrictions recommended by staff, but we're going to not fund the enforcement of it. We're going to just rely on our current code enforcement officer to go around and there's as
I Rob second
is,
that motion.
Saying, there's a threat of a fine.
Yeah.
You know, but maybe not a huge probability that it will occur.
But maybe we pick up 10% of those worst case scenario people.
Potentially. And the second possible motion is to say, no, we're not going to do water restrictions. We're going to continue with education. And we're going to rely on education to get people to do the right thing.
Education continues no matter
what. Chandler, you moved into position.
My preference would be that we follow what other cities have done, which is the odds and evens, because it's easy to enforce. And it's 3 days a week instead of the four if people are watering twice a day. And I think we have to enforce it. I just don't see, even if you pick up 10% of the people, I don't see how you can tell one person, we caught you, and everyone else is abusing it, and just because they didn't get caught, so sad. We decided not to enforce it very well.
And so
what happens when they're watering?
I really have a frustration with this comparing to somebody who's going 10 miles an hour over the speed limit. We're talking about people not being able to use the water in the city. So it's not an apples to apples comparison.
The water they paid for that water, remember?
Right.
paid for it all during the winter, remember?
My point is I don't understand. I don't think it makes sense to have any restrictions if we're not going to actually enforce those restrictions. And so to me, but again, if we decide to meter at some point, one of the options is going, maybe bonding for that, and which has to go to a vote of the residents, which no one's going to vote for if they feel like we've done nothing.
If it was a special revenue bond, it wouldn't have to.
So are you not worried about?
If it's a GO bond, you're right. It would have to go to a vote of the residents, but a utility revenue.
So are you not worried about low pressure if we're doing a three-day-a-week schedule?
We already have low pressure. I actually don't think it's a bad idea to try some of these restrictions and see, and if they fail, be able to tell residents, look, we tried what you asked us to do, and it didn't work. And so our only option left is this. But right now, I think it's hard to tell residents, we're not going to try anything, but the only solution is metering, because they don't agree with us. They do not see it that way. They feel like we should be doing something. Like they see all these other cities doing something, and we're doing nothing, but we want to meter them.
So you would spend the $22,000?
I would for enforcement for 1 year. And if it doesn't work, I think we can go back to residents at that point and say, we tried education in 2014. These were the results. We tried enforcement in 2015. These were the results. This is our last option left.
Okay, so I think, and I'm totally speaking for the council here, but I think all of us agree with that. I think our problem is trying to figure out how to enforce it and what days we should water. And I don't know that we've come to a consensus on that. And I think if I'm hearing everybody correctly, I think that's where our sticking point is we don't know how to accommodate, because we are on a hillside, we don't know how to accommodate all the days of the week and the state recommendations and everything else.
Well, see, my impression is that there's still a disagreement on whether we should hire staff to enforce these or not.
Well, my thought on that was Jeff recommended two people. We already have one that does other violations, and she's out doing other things. Maybe
can I touch on
we
that
do
real,
two.
Real fast?
I mean, just add another part. One.
So we have a code enforcement official, and she's been with the city for about 2 years in July. She does an excellent job. She's overworked, and it's one of those positions that's a very thankless position.
Absolutely.
But she does a great job. And honestly, she's budgeted for 20 hours a week. And she's always on task, always looking at code violations that are currently going on in the city. So to add in watering restrictions for just her would be very difficult to throw on her plate and say, well, you're one of the two people that does code enforcement. So, well, you're one of the persons that already does code enforcement. So this is your new task. I get nervous that the level of enforcement would not be up to snuff if it were left up to this one individual who already has a full plate. That's my concern, as just watching her as her department head. I would be nervous that the council would look at that and say, well, we didn't do good enough enforcement on this.
For the daytime hours, though, couldn't Public Works help with enforcement? Is there around doing whatever that they've got on their plate for the day?
Jeff would have to speak to that, but I think it kind of depends on what they're doing, too. Because if they're responding to a water leak and they see somebody watering, they're probably not going to stop. And so it probably depends on what the project is that they're working on.
I'd like to venture a motion again.
What's that?
I'd like to do a motion again.
Go right ahead.
Okay. I want a motion that we put in water restrictions odd-numbered houses get Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Even-numbered houses get Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday. Saturday is a water-by-hand day, just dry spots. And to enforce it, we hire one person to enforce it during, and that in addition to the staff that they help out. And does that cover everything that we've talked about?
What would you propose for fines?
Fines, I'd say $50 first time, $100 the second time, $300 the third time.
Can I ask you to modify that?
Go ahead.
So sure. is your motion complete?
Do a second and
no time
limit. No limit on the times a day.
And no what?
No limit on the times a day to water.
Okay, Mrs. Reese wants to have you accept something.
Well, most cities, the first time they give a warning,
yeah.
I would say not a fine from.
I will add that to my motion that the first time is a warning.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to second it and then amend it. Okay, so I'm going
to agree to the amendment.
Yes, so I'm going to second and request an amendment that the first violation is just a notice, a warning. Mm-hmm. The second violation is a $50 fine, and third violation, a $200 fine.
I agree.
Which
with
is
that.
Similar to Alpine.
I'll agree to that.
Okay. So I've got a motion that's been seconded. Any further discussion?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Could I request a modification? I would prefer to leave the watering extra day on a Sunday as opposed to the Saturday. Just because I think the other cities did that too. I think there must have been some reason for that. Maybe it's a day to recharge our system before the start of the week is what I'm thinking. But
it actually makes it easier for people working on their landscapes,
right, that's
sprinklers
what I'm
and everything
too,
to work it on Saturday.
If
than
you
it
work
does
Monday,
on
Wednesday, Friday, and then Saturday to, you know, I don't know.
I would be fine
anyone
with
disagree
that.
With that?
I would disagree with it because I don't get out in my yard and work on Sundays personally, but I don't know if everyone else does.
Okay, so you agree with it? You agree with it?
I said I disagree.
He disagrees with it.
You disagree with it.
Because I think everyone's out working their yard more on Saturdays in our community anyway. But
come on, you're close.
Yeah.
I would agree with it just to be consistent with other communities so as our residents.
I would strongly encourage you to accept that amendment.
I would do it.
I will accept it.
Thank you.
With peer pressure given.
So did you say you would accept it?
Yes, I will.
Thank you. Jenny, you'll accept the change as well?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So I've got a motion that's been seconded and amended. And is there any more discussion?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Obviously, this is just this year only.
Yes.
And we could modify it come June or July or August in the event there's an emergency. Correct?
Yes.
Sure.
No motion is binding on the council. We can change it tomorrow if we want to.
We can also decide to hire additional enforcement in
if
the summer.
If things are working differently.
Which I may feel we need to do.
Yeah. That's my only other comment.
I do have a discussion point that I would like to add to this. I'm really sorry. I would like to put a limit on the amount that we spend towards this and limit it to the $22,000. And if it goes close to that and we need to approve more funds beyond that, that it comes back to the council so that we can readdress it at that point.
Okay.
Oh, wait. Anybody have one more question?
Hold on.
Agreed.
Mr. Gustis is wanting to make an amendment. Do you accept his?
I do.
Jenny?
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
Could we also amend it if we're going to make regulation or restrictions that we would highly recommend that they keep aware of physical weather conditions such that if it's windy at the times that they're normally watering that they could change it? I mean, they should change. Be aware of the wind is bad and just some other guidelines to help them.
I think we will very definitely continue with our education campaign.
As the education
just process. Education campaign needs to continue.
You're just encouraging more education, which is fine. But you're not asking to amend the motion.
No, but if we come up with another thing, this is what the council did. I would like them to say, you know, be aware of when you're watering. Are you watering when it's windy?
I think that goes along with our education program where we're talking about it in the newsletter every single month.
Yeah.
So talking about not watering when it's windy, easily done.
Okay.
Is there any more amendments? Any more discussion? Let's have a vote. Mr. Crawley.
Hi.
Mr. Gustis.
I really hope this works, so I...
Okay. Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese?
Aye.
Mr. Cipolla?
Aye.
Thank you very much. Motion passes unanimously. Ladies and gentlemen, good work. Let's.
Daniel, I feel your pain.
Let's take a 5-minute break and then come back and go into exec session.
Is that all that's left?
Good work. I think.
I knew that she.
Hold on, baby. Listen up.
Okay. It's not
letting me talk. Well, they don't have a plug
in there. You're going to have to talk. Okay, I'm just going to talk loud. I move that we go into executive session pursuant to Kentucky Code 52-4-205 to discuss the care of professional competence or physical or mental health of an individual.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second? I'll second. Motion's been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right, any opposed?
Aye.
Aye. And so,
okay.
Daniel,
so we're going to
hold on just a second.
I'm just going to just say that Daniel wanted to talk about.
Okay, recording.
Okay, are we recording?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Now I'll take a motion to adjourn the meeting.
I move that we adjourn the city council meeting.
Okay. Is there a second?
A second.
Motion and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is unanimous. Thank you very much.
Can we write that down as well?
Yes.